Hey everyone, welcome to episode 17 of the Historic Performance Podcast, presented by historicperformance.net. I'm your host, James Darley. If this is your first time listening, thanks for tuning in. The Historic Performance Podcast is published every Tuesday and Thursday, and notes from today's show can be found at www.historicperformance.net/podcast. You can connect with me via Twitter at Historic Perform. On Twitter, I publish all the latest episodes and give you the opportunity to ask questions to future guests. In today's episode, I chat with Derek Salvador. Derek is a Canadian soccer fitness coach that worked with KW United in the USL PDL this summer and is a lecturer at the University of Toronto. In this episode, we discuss the challenges of working in the USL PDL, player fatigue management, and sports psychology. Let's get the show started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Historic Performance Podcast. Today, I have a person from the land of ice hockey, maple syrup, our friends from up north, Canada, just outside of Toronto. His name is Derek Salvador, and I'm really happy to have him on the podcast. Derek, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well, James. How are you?
I'm doing really well, Derek. So let's get started by just giving the audience a little bit of information about yourself, your background, education, and your current role.
Thanks, James, for having me on again. Just to let you know, I think you hit almost every stereotype about us Canadians up here, but I won't hold you to that. My name is Derek Salvador, and I'm a strength and conditioning coach, I've been working at it for a number of years now. And my education, just a graduate of university, and then became a certified strength and conditioning specialist. Then continuing my education, I went to Sheridan College and took an excellent program there called the Human Performance Training Certificate Program, where I got to work with a lot of local strength conditioning coaches at various universities, those in our Canadian Olympic program. And so from a hands-on point, it was a really, really, really good experience, and met some great mentors who put me in touch with, you know, some good people and just helped me expand my knowledge and my experience in the field. And currently, I work at a couple different places. Throughout the day, I'm a teacher at the University of Toronto. So I teach the kinesiology and physical education program there, and also strength conditioning coach in the sport of soccer, working with a couple local clubs, and also working with the academy downtown. And then throughout the summer, I was given the opportunity to work closely with the USL PDL team up in Waterloo called KW United. And we had a terrific season, and we're actually able to win a national championship this past summer. So, which was a really good experience for me. So that's pretty much what I'm up to these days.
Yeah, I'm glad you won't hold me to it. I actually went to McGill University for my master's for 2 years. So oh, I actually good. Lived in Montreal.
Awesome, awesome.
For our audience out there that may not necessarily know what the USL PDL is, can you give us a little bit of background in terms of the league?
Yeah, it was my first year working in the league, and to tell you the truth, I didn't know too much about it myself. So basically what the USL PDL is, now I'm hoping correct when I'm stating this, is it's an under-23 league. It's the Premier Development League. So it's a couple tiers down from the USL Pro League. And basically it's a very short season. The season starts in May, and it finishes in August. Actually, the regular season finished in mid-July. And then due to conferences and then us actually making it to national championship, it went a little bit longer. So it's mostly designed for players who are in college, university, and just allows them an opportunity to play, at a high level during their off season, which is the summer. And that was pretty much, I think that's pretty much what it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, and it's a really short season that we're talking about here. I think you start in late May. And if you make it all the way to national championship, I believe that was in early August, correct?
Yeah, it was the first weekend of August. So it's pretty much done. And it's almost bittersweet. You spend all this time with these players. You get to know them really well. The last game is done and, you know, everyone heads back off to school. And there's really no, you know, the goodbyes are kind of hard because there's not like an official goodbye. It's kind of like, you know, give everyone a big hug, you know, great to see you, great season, and boom, off everyone goes kind of thing. So, but yeah, like I said, from a learning standpoint, it was a really, really good experience. And like I said, just really short and sweet and quick too.
When you're receiving these players, many of them have been through their college season, college strength and conditioning. Probably some of them have some type of injuries or nagging discomfort. So how do you go about evaluating them as a group?
Yeah, that was tough. I'm not going to lie here. I actually met the team about 6 days before the season started. Things happened really quickly. I was brought in by Coach Chris Pozniak, who I work with at one of the local academies. And he was brought onto the team. And then him and I had chatted, and he had asked me to work closely with him to help out with this. And it happened very quick for us. I met the team, like I said, 6 days before. And basically, you're just trying to collect as much information as you can from these guys, you know, kind of where they're at. You know, it's really hard to evaluate fitness. You know, we really looked at basically injury history, you know, the injuries that they had possibly coming in and how we would manage those, and then trying to get basically a background on what they had been up to coming into the season. So that way when we would, you know, try and plan training and the volumes we would go at, we could see, you know, whether we could, you know, push them hard early in the early phases or if we had to back off and build them up slowly. So yeah, so it was, like I said, it was a lot of this. I don't want to say it was a guessing game, but a lot of times it was just, we just tried to, like, a lot of trial and error. You know, we tried the first session, see how they reacted to it. Okay, great. We go into training the next day. How are the players feeling? And, you know, go on certain intensities and volumes that we wanted to hit there. And then just basically it was an ongoing basis, basically even a daily basis on how we would adjust training. So, you know, when we hear about all these, you know, programs where it's got to be block periodization and you need to do this and you need to do that. For us, it was really different. It was, like I said, it was a daily thing. And the schedule really, really told us how we would plan. You know, we went to a point in the season where I think we played 4 games in 8 days. And again, it just came down to managing it every day, you know, planning your recovery sessions well and just going about the season in that way.
When you're receiving these players, I know, for example, other universities, myself, when it comes to the women's soccer team at the university, we give them summer packets, which has what they should be doing in terms of weight room, what they should be doing in terms of conditioning. And these players, once they come into KW United, are you dealing with everything strength and conditioning related, or are they still doing the programs that they receive from the universities?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. Many of them had their programs that they had to work on throughout the summer. So then it becomes, you know, do I come in and start changing all of that and basically trying to address fitness from our standpoint, from our team, or do we just follow the college program that they've been given? And I guess for my first year, it was more or less, you know, trying to make sure that we maintain those good relationships between the team and the college team. So it was very respectful of that. So what we did was we had many of the players would bring in their college programs to me, and we would review it together. And then we would make adjustments based on how our season was going. So oftentimes I found with some of the programs, they would almost gear towards a player as if the player was not involved in any soccer at all throughout the summer. It'd just be someone, say, who's home for the summer holidays. Maybe they're working their job, and then they would train according to what their given guidelines were. So I kind of looked at their programs and been like, okay, we're actually in a full season. The training demand is quite high. So let's see how we can use your program, maybe make some modifications as far as the sets, the reps, you know, the work to rest ratios, how often throughout the week you had to train, and try to do that so that way we weren't overtraining the players. So we kept a lot of data. I collect some data from the players. It wasn't anything fancy. It was just, you know, paper and pen and Excel. and basically just trying to track them on a daily basis and just looking at the numbers and seeing what those values were. And like anything, you know, if anything stuck out that we know is a trend, if say for one reason we had one particular athlete who was getting maybe 5 to 6 hours sleep a night, and just basically pull them off to the side and explain to them, you know, just talking with them, you know, what's going on here. And then, you know, if there's anything we can do to try to change that. So we did that. So basically we had our training program. We looked at the college's training program and just basically made sure that the two tried to mesh well together. And then we took that approach, and it actually worked quite well. So
I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's always been one of the largest criticisms that I've had. And I understand that some universities don't have a very large strength and conditioning department. You know, you may have one assistant who is dealing with 4 or 5 teams, and they may not necessarily know each individual sport very well. But I do find that many of those programs, there isn't a lot of conversation with the athlete, for example, saying, hey, are you going to be playing soccer over the summer or you're not? Because a lot of them have 4 days of lifting, 3 days of conditioning. And obviously, if you're doing that and you're also trying to play soccer, where you mentioned 4 games in 8 days, that's going to lead to a breakdown in injuries and just a terrible idea. So I'm glad that you evaluated it and fit it into the needs of the players at the time.
Yeah. And you know what, to be honest, the group of athletes that I had, I couldn't have asked for anything better. It was like the buy-in was like within the first 5 minutes that I actually met them. I think what was really respectful of the team was that to them, sometimes they feel, you know, I hope I'm not treading over anything when I say this, but sometimes they feel that when they go to certain schools, there are certain sports that get certain preference, right? And some of them do feel that there's that out of touch between them and say the strength and conditioning coach. They don't often see them. And like you said, are just given a package and just almost left to fend for themselves. And I think what was really nice for them was that they actually had someone who was dedicated to just them, and who was going to see them on a daily basis and just to make sure that, yeah, they were doing things properly. And if they had any questions, they had someone to go to. And again, it was a lot of education too, and just really trying to teach the athletes that, you know, you don't have to go big or go home on every single workout. Like, we can modify things. You know, we can work on technique. We can just make sure that we do certain lifts just to try and keep you healthy throughout the season. You know, teaching about rest and recovery and nutrition and hydration. And even if they had learned about that, just, you know, constantly firing home those points and the benefits and why we track that stuff. And you know what, like for most of these guys, if I would have told them to stand on their head for 20 minutes, they would have done it. And that's how awesome they were to work with. They bought into it right away. And, you know what, for the most part, we kept the squad, you know, relatively healthy throughout this whole season. Training was awesome because everyone was present and intensity was good. And, so I think for me, like I said, it was just nice to sit there and just see what, you know, encompasses a college season and just the demands on these players and just what they have to go through on a yearly basis, and then trying not to add to that stress kind of thing. So we handled it in that regards, and it was good.
Would you be able to take us through a typical week where you would, and I'm sure there's no typical week since you were saying that there's varying fixtures, but let's say you have a week where you're just playing twice within that week. So could you take us through each individual day?
Yeah. So we try to basically, work off of, instead of saying, looking at it as from a Monday, Tuesday or Wednesday, we went as far as like match day -3, match day -2, -1, match day. Then sometimes we'd have maybe match day +1, and then we'd be right down to match day -1 and then match day. So basically, like I said, we collected the data daily. It was, like I said, paper and pen. So I had 2 binders in the athlete's locker room. They learned that as soon as they walked in, they would give me certain numbers that I need to look at. So we kept track of sleep duration, so how long they slept, the quality of that sleep, muscle soreness, and how fatigued they were. And then we also tracked RPE. So when they first walked into the locker room, they would input their first values in there as far as like sleep duration and muscle soreness. And then at the end of training, they would walk in and they would submit their RPE. And then I would collect those values and then basically input into my Excel spreadsheet. And then we went from there. So we kind of use those numbers sometimes to gauge training on how we would do it. So training was always in the morning. So we practiced in the mornings, and then, you know, the coaching and staff and I, we would kind of discuss, you know, the plan and whether or not that was acceptable for the players or not. Would it be too much? Would it be too little? And then basically what we did is we took those numbers that I collected and we kind of created, we looked at individual athletes, but then we tried to create a team score as well. So we created it, created a fatigue index and an RPE, and then applied that to our total volume for the day and try to get a team intensity score. So that way we kind of knew how much we were pushing them, whether we were going too hard, we were going too low. So they would come in, we would train them in that regards, you know, just basically talking a lot to the players to see how they feel. So particular days they would come in, you know, just trying to get a general consensus, you know, how's everyone feeling today? Everyone's feeling a little bit sore, a little bit tight. Okay, so then our warm up would be a little bit longer, and maybe try to factor in movement prep work into that as well. So we kind of, you know, do an extensive warm up, a little bit more stretching involved. Yeah, I know there's, you know, people go on about static stretching and dynamic stretching and stuff. At the end of the day, sometimes if the players need a little bit of time on their own to get some stretches in that helps them feel better, then so be it. That's what we did. So then after that, we would do our training. Then after that, we would focus on our cool downs, and then basically trying to teach them proper recovery methods. So we did, we looked at contrast bath, we did cold plunges. We had guys who really felt good with, you know, trigger point work and foam rolling. So we incorporated that into it, and then basically looked at it from a day-to-day basis. And, you know, as we get closer to match day, we would try to, you know, try and keep the health of players as best we could. The day before, try to maybe keep things a little bit on the lighter side, try to have some fun with the athletes. You know, sometimes soccer, tennis was a popular approach to training. And then we would have our match day. We'd have players, you know, in early to prep for what they need. We had our team meetings. We'd have our warm up onto the field and stuff. We had it broken down to 45 to 50 minutes before kickoff, and we had each segment broken down to how we wanted to approach warm up. And then the next day, we went in with regeneration. We'd come in and we'd do regeneration sessions. Try to keep the players fresh. You know, go through a stretching session. Those who didn't play or may have not dressed, they would partake in training. So we made sure that that, you know, we kept their fitness standards up, and that was that, and that's how we basically monitored it. We just went from day to day, from game to game, and looked at how much time we had in between the games, and took that approach as well.
Couple of follow-up questions here, and I'm going to go one by one. In terms of the values that you're using to look at sleep quality, I believe you mentioned soreness as well. Yeah. Is it out of 1 to 5 or 1 to 10?
We did. It was from 1 to 5. So I had a little guide as to what that would be. So that way the players came in, they kind of knew. And then RPE, yeah, we did it from 0 to 10.
Other question that I had is, you mentioned that you have a great relationship with the head coach. He was the one who brought you in because you had worked with him at one of the academies. How would you go about discussing it between one another? What the players should and should not be doing in terms of training. Like, for example, this is going to be too high intensity or this is going to be too low intensity.
Yeah. So he would come up to me sometimes. It was a really good relationship. We'd go back and forth. There'd be some times where maybe there were certain concerns that I had with the players and bring it to his attention. You know, so-and-so hasn't quite recovered from the last game, is feeling a little bit tight, a little bit sore. Maybe they shouldn't partake in training today. Maybe they can do some training off on their own on the side. Because we'd have one or two athletes who, you know, they would really, their intensity levels within the game was very high. And they always reported either a 9 or a 10 as far as RPE at the end of their games, and it usually would take them an extra day compared to some of the others for recovery. So we kind of looked at it from a team standpoint, but also from an individual basis. So if there were those who were struggling a little bit, felt a little bit sore, a little bit off, a little bit beat up, we would pull them out of training and work with them on the side. Some players maybe who are coming back from injury again, we'd be working with them in a separate training and stuff. And there'd be times where he would come up to me and to be like, hey, listen, here's my plan for today. You know, because we even had one session just before the season started where really we had almost 30 players at camp and not really sure who was going to be starting, like who was in the starting lineup or who would be dressing, who'd be playing. So, you know, just talking to me and just basically saying, listen, here's my plan for today. I'm going to try and go a little bit of a longer session. Do you think this is appropriate? And, you know, we just look at what was coming up next in the schedule and whether or not we had enough days that the players could recover adequately and stuff. So it was a really good back and forth. There'd be times where we'd even just try to say, how are we going to plan training today? Bounce some ideas back and forth off each other and then go from there. So like I said, it was really good working relationship. Couldn't have asked for anything better. And like I said, at the end of the day, I think the players were really respectful of that. And like I said, it worked really well.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like absolutely that there's a great communication, great respect, and that obviously makes your job significantly easier.
Yeah, because on top of that, too, is that, like I said, we didn't just have the season to deal with because at our club, too, we have players or we have access to some of the other clubs that are in MLS and stuff. So we even had, when we did have a break in the season, there would be times where we would have maybe 5 up to 7 days off. And some of our players were sent on trial to the various MLS clubs throughout the season as well. So, you know, we had to manage that as well. So we had some teams that were off in, or some players that were off in, you know, Orlando or Seattle or here locally at Toronto FC. Some also went to the club as crew. So like I said, on top of managing this whole season, we also had to worry about players that were individually being sent to work on, to do training and to try and get, exposure to some of the top clubs and hoping that, they could turn professional and stuff. So like I said, it was just a lot of finding out who was where, who was doing what, and just keeping the lines of communication open. And I think that's the biggest thing that I feel for myself, which was excellent, was just communication is number one. There's been often times where I've worked at various clubs and stuff where you almost feel like you're on a deserted island. You know, the coach just shows up, shakes your hand, off they go. You're left to deal with the players. You don't really know what's happening throughout the season or what they've been up to or what they're doing and stuff. So it doesn't make your training as effective as it could be. But like I said, at the club, it was just from management right down to the coaching staff, the players, like it was top notch. So
one of the things that you're mentioned here, and it's part tied with monitoring recovery, is obviously a lot of these players have had a lot of minutes throughout the year. Did you find that you're having any issues with overuse injuries?
Yeah, we would have to be very, very careful of that. Because like I said, some players would, they would feel beat up after a game. And then there were some others that it seems like they could play for 4 days straight and they would be fine. So like I said, when we looked at regeneration, we would look to see which athletes were, struggling a little bit or a little bit sore. Then we'd have to look at the schedule. And then also times, myself and the coaching staff would have to sit down and be like, okay, this game is coming up. So-and-so isn't feeling 100%. Maybe they're going to start off on the bench today. Maybe they're not even going to dress today. So we really managed the team in that regards. We had a very, I'd have to say that the depth of the team was very good too. We even had, for example, when we played our conference finals, we played, I believe it was on the Friday at 5 p.m. And then the final for the conference was slated for the next day at 7. So really there was just over 24 hours to, not even 24 hours to recover and prepare for that game if we won the conference semifinals. So like I said, we just had to be careful with just really just trying to communicate with the players and just get as much information from them as we could. We also had our medical staff, which was excellent. So, they worked a lot in order to keep these guys healthy. It's just basically a really, really important from a team perspective that just all members were on board and just communications was, lines of communication were open. And just that's the approach we took.
You mentioned earlier about lifting sessions. Mm-hmm. How difficult was it to even have lifting sessions at all when, for example, sometimes you're playing 4 games in 8 days? Where would you find the time for that? And I'm guessing it was mostly injury prevention.
Yeah, and to tell you the truth, sometimes we didn't even lift. I tried to, if we had the 4 games in 8 days, we weren't lifting. You know, some players would want to go into the gym and lift on their own, and some of them were just doing upper body workouts, some core workouts, trying to factor in some of the programs that had been given to them throughout the season. You know, I just try to monitor the loads at which they were putting themselves at. Where I tried to really incorporate some of the lifts is where we had a little bit of a break between games. So say, for example, we had five days off between our games, or even if maybe we even had up to 7 days off, that's where I try to factor in more of the lifting. But like I said, a lot of it was just from an injury prevention standpoint. And to be honest, you know, I hope I didn't insult some of the players, but some of them didn't know how to lift very well either. So we just tried to scale back that a little bit and trying to give them a little bit of a better foundation to work on top of. And that in itself, I felt was more than inadequate for them. So we just did a lot of body weight stuff. We try to factor some of the stuff in as part of the warm up, you know what I mean? So, so like I said, I try to put it in where I could, but with always, being conscious of how much volume we were actually putting on the players. So like I said, we took that approach and it worked out quite well.
Yeah, and I've seen that time and time again, and it's difficult because in the college setting, the head coach of the team has so much power, and some of them don't actually like their players lifting at all, and obviously that's their prerogative. But sometimes I feel that there's also a disconnect between the strength and conditioning department and the head coach. And I guess a lot of that also stems from the fact that the strength and conditioning coach may not necessarily know much about soccer. So then you have the head coach just kind of blowing them off and being like, well, this person doesn't really know about much soccer. What can they offer me? But I think sometimes that ends up harming the players.
Yeah. Well, like I said, with Coach Pozniak, he's a former pro. You know, he was a Canadian international, and he played overseas, and he also played in MLS for a little while. And so what was nice is that he understood the value of it and why it was important. And so he himself was a great resource, because there'd be oftentimes I'm like, hey, this is what I'm planning to do with some of the players today. From your experience, how would you feel? And he would give me his opinion, and then we could adjust it from there. So he was a great resource as well. And like I said, even just the rest recovery, like, you know, he would be the one to tell the players, like, listen, if you're tired, you know what I mean, come on in. We'll find some way to manage it, but just don't take a day off. Like, you know, come in for regeneration, and it's going to be important. You know, so his input was really, really valuable as well. And just the way he approached it is like, you know, like a true pro. So like I said, it was amazing to get his input and stuff like that, because like you said, you know, sometimes you have a head coach who has one thought and then a strength and conditioning coach who has a different thought. And then, you know, you're trying to work separately and it doesn't mesh well. It doesn't. And just from my experience, I've been on both sides and it doesn't work well at all. You know what I mean? So it was just nice to have his input and just have him as a resource as well.
No, of course. And from my experience as well, it doesn't work well at all, because I mean, you don't know what's going on during the training sessions. Many times when there's that disconnect, they don't actually know what's going on in terms of gym sessions, even if the players are coming. So you end up getting poor load management, and that ends up harming your players. So totally, yep. Agree that, yep, communication is key, and the understanding between the two is obviously key.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
One part of recovery that sometimes is often missed is nutrition. And nutrition, mm-hmm, is obviously extremely important in order to make sure that your players are going to perform optimally. How would you go about dealing with nutrition at KW United? Were you giving them food post-match, or was that mainly up to the players?
That was mostly up to the players, but I did my best to try to talk to them on an individual basis and just to get them to understand the importance of what they were eating. Because they lived in the residence, I think we were one of the few clubs that actually provides food for their players. So then speaking to our person who was responsible for all that, you know, I tried to talk with the players to see basically what they were eating and what they had and what the requests were, and then trying to relay that information back to management, so that way they can ensure that the players were eating well and staying staying nourished and stuff. So then afterwards, after game, we would always have team dinners. We were really good about trying to feed the players as much as we could, or well, not, you know, not to a point where we're getting them fat or anything like that, but just trying to make sure that we keep their energy levels up, and just try to, I guess more or less when I look at even some of the younger players I work with, is just trying to teach them how to make the right choices. And not necessarily telling them what exact food to eat, but just the types of food they should be consuming. And I think that's really important, because at the end of the day, you know, you're also trying to, not just for performance, but just for overall health. You know what I mean? So when these guys are getting older and their careers are coming to an end, that way they continue to lead a good, healthy lifestyle. So just teaching them to make the right choices, and basically for them trying to find out what best worked for them, you know, as far as timing. You know, myself, I know when I played, I'd like to eat a minimum of 4 hours before a game and nothing more, because I just didn't want that sensation of feeling full. We have some others that, you know what, up until about a half an hour before kickoff, some of them are still munching on a few snacks that'll kind of, you know, top up their energy stores and stuff. So like I said, we just tried to find out from an individual basis what each person liked as far as habits, but then also trying to educate them to make the right choices.
Another aspect that I think is really missed sometimes is the psychological aspect. And I'm sure you had to deal with this, since many of these players were coming from college, being away from their family. Usually they go back during the summer, spend time with their family. But if they're coming now to KW United and they're not local, they're basically away from their family for their entire year. So I'm sure there's a lot to deal with in terms of emotions. Did you find that to be the case?
Yeah, like anything, it was, you know, that was, we had to manage that as well. You know, we have several players that weren't just from the US, but also who were going to school in the US for who were from overseas. We had players from England, Norway, Germany, Finland, and it's a long way from home. And at the end of the day, you know, they're still young, and they're on their own here in a foreign land. And so we try to, so for myself, just tried my best to communicate with them and just to see how each person's feeling, how they're doing. You know, management was really good too at trying to have a lot of team bonding moments. You know, just we took them for one outing just to try to, you know, raise some spirits and have some fun. The kids went to, well, when I say kids, they're much younger than me. The players, we took them to Canada's Wonderland, which is a theme park here, just for a day out, just to have some fun and just try to get our minds off the football, and just to, you know, just have fun being a kid kind of thing, you know. So there was that. Some of them wanted to go home just for a quick visit, so you know, we allowed that. It would be the arrangements for them to do that and stuff. And so yeah, we just tried to be listen to the players and just seeing what's you know, how they were feeling and what you know, some of the requests that they had. And just made sure that from a psychological standpoint that, yeah, just trying to keep everyone happy. And like I said, just talking to a lot of the players and keeping the communication open and stuff like that. And, you know, if there were some issues that would come up, you know, with the coaching staff, discuss, you know, some of the things that we've been hearing, whether someone was, you know, feeling kind of down because they wanted to see their families or anything like that. So, like I said, we just really monitored that aspect as well.
Yeah, and that's and I'm really glad that you, I think that's the part that gets overlooked sometimes when you're thinking about strength and conditioning. A lot of people think about, you know, monitoring training loads, monitoring recovery, but a part that is not really discussed in podcasts or, you know, outside of networking settings where you're talking with other strength and conditioning coaches is the communication aspect, the aspect where you relate to the players and understand their needs and understand that, you know, it's just not the numbers, but they are individuals and humans themselves who deal with a lot of things outside of the pitch.
Yeah, honestly, I'm really glad you said that. Like, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, sometimes from strength and conditioning and you know, from soccer and fitness and all that stuff is, you know, we get so carried away with the technical and the tactical and you know, the training load and you know, planning training and what we're doing within that and the fitness of the player and, you know, collecting data and all stuff. And like you said, they're people too. And, you know, we have to respect that. And I know for myself, you know, I still read a lot about, you know, strength conditioning and that kind of stuff. But I find myself reading more and more about psychology and just, you know, the mental aspect of it and how much that truly impacts the game and just trying to relate to all different types of players. You know what I mean? You have some, you know, that one approach may work, but then you have others where that approach does not work. And how do you mesh it all together? Like I said, we had at times up to almost 30 individuals there. And again, like I said, you know, it's 30 individuals, not just 30 players, you know. So we just said, we just try to manage all that, and you try to get to know them as best you can. And like I said, it's a very short season. And how do you do that? You know, with some of my other work that I do, and like I said, this being amateur, I was only able to be with the team for maybe up to 5 days a week on some good weeks. And then there were other weeks where, you know, just to work and demands and things like that, I didn't, wasn't able to spend that much time. So then now you have to find other ways to communicate. And then, you know, now you try and, you know, discuss with the coaching staff. Have you heard anything? How are these guys doing? How are they feeling? And with their medical staff. And so, yeah, it's just, it plays a big part. It plays a big part. So,
and I'm glad that you mentioned the fact that having even been in this role for so long, I believe you mentioned about 15 years working in terms of soccer fitness, that you, psychology is a very important aspect. And I think that's a part that's overlooked by many young coaches that are just coming out of the university setting. Many of them think they have it completely figured out, that they're going to have the most amazing program. And of course, you can have the most amazing program on paper, but A, you need to think about the buy-in process. You need to think about, you know, what's going on with the players outside, because that's going to affect the way they're able to perform, whether it's training or in a game. And that's a part that I think I wish was highlighted more, especially in the university setting.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, we hear all these, you hear all these things now, and now with social media and just the access and availability we have to all this information, it's oftentimes it's information overload. And there's sometimes where I have to put it away, because, you know, you see all these new things that come out, and you start to question your approach and whether or not, you know, what am I doing? Is this proper? Should we be doing this? You know, some one day it's dynamic stretching, the other day, you know, it's static stretching, and then we're told our warm up's supposed to be this long, and then our warm up's supposed to be doing this, and then are we supposed to implement halftime warm ups and stuff? And, you know, again, like I said, it's really hard to try to find one approach. And, you know, maybe one approach that works in one setting may not work in another. And I think it's just trying to manage that and balance that and stuff. And, you know, I think there's so much to this field that, you know, it's always changing on an ongoing basis and stuff, and just trying to stay on top of it all is overwhelming at times. But again, you know, you just try and look at your principles and just try to find out exactly what it is you're trying to achieve, which with every training session. Maybe like I took a day-to-day approach. I took a game-to-game approach, and some may look at me and say, you know, maybe that was the wrong way to do things. But you know what? For resources that were available, and then my time that I was able to put into this, you know, that's the approach we took. And you know what? And for this setting, it worked well. And then maybe for another setting, it's we're way off. So again, I think it's really important to just sit back and evaluate, you know, exactly, you know, what each person is, you know, the situation they're in, and just the demands of the job, and what's going to be appropriate for that particular setting. You know what I mean? So, I think oftentimes there's too much finger pointing and, you know, people saying this approach shouldn't be working. People should be doing this. People shouldn't be doing that. Okay, great. But I can't make a comment or an assumption until I exactly know what's going on.
So I think that actually provides a great segue, because you mentioned that, you know, some people may look at you and say, you know, taking a game to game approach was incorrect. Now that this was your first time experience, looking back at it, is there anything that you would do differently in the future?
You know, now knowing that, well, hopefully if I'm back next season, you never know, things could always change. But the thing is, if coming back next season is trying to get in touch with the players sooner. So, you know, already having those discussions with management, it comes across to a point where, you know, once we have the commitment for the player that they will be joining us for the summer, then it's reaching out to them and trying to find as much information that we can, some background information before we get started. So we kind of know the player we're inheriting prior to the season and actually starting, and not trying to figure it out as we go along, kind of thing. And then just trying to implement some different ways to collect monitoring or collect our data. You know, like I said, last year we did it with paper and pen, which you know which can be very time consuming, especially when you're inputting it on multiple fronts. So trying to find a way maybe that we can do an online version of it, so that way the players can input all their information, and then it can update my databases you know, automatically, which Excel is an amazing program, but also one of the biggest headaches for myself as well. So that, and then just trying to find other ways to look at fatigue. I think really at the end of the day for us, that's what we went into the approach was really just trying to manage the fatigue of the players and trying to keep them fresh and trying to keep them healthy. So trying to get in touch with the players is going to be one thing. And another thing is just, like I said, continuing our education with the players and for any of the new players that are coming in, you know, keeping them up to speed on recovery and rest and why that's important, and then, you know, proper nutrition and stuff, and trying to work, you know, like I said, keep the lines of communication open with the coaching staff and making sure the medical staff, we're all up to speed. And then from a training point, we know once we get the schedule, then we'll be able to see how we can manage it again.
Have you heard of either After Action or Fit for 90? I know that a couple of guests who have come on the podcast previously have both mentioned it, and some of them use it with their teams.
Yeah, I've heard of the Fit for 90. I actually spoke to John Cone a couple of years ago. I was at a conference, the World Conference on Science and Soccer in Portland, and him and I had a really good chat. And I got to know a little bit more about his system and stuff. He's even written a really now. There's even an athlete assessment profile that he did in the, I think it's the journal, the Strength Conditioning Journal, where his article is really simple. I really like the approach. I like what some of the assessment stuff that he did. I really like his monitoring thing. To be honest, though, it really comes down to budget. I don't have a big budget at all. So before I start, you know, trying to look for ways to spend money, I'm going to try and exhaust as many resources I can myself, just through, like I said, Excel's been has been great. There's some really good resources out there. I'm sure many people have heard of John Light and his Excel Tricks for Sports. I believe this is YouTube channel, and like just great resource, and plenty of stuff to do on there. And he's a great guy too, where, you know, him and I had lots of discussions. So anything I've been stumped on, I've sent it his way, and he's been able to help me out and stuff. So I've really tried to build my own stuff as much as I can first. But like I said, yeah, Fit for 90, most people I know who use it are really happy with the product and stuff. But like I said, it just comes down for me, it's about budget, and I don't have a very big budget at all right now. So
no, and that obviously makes sense. It always comes down to budget. And I'm going to make sure to link that YouTube channel when I publish the podcast, because I think it would be a great resource for people. And if you get the chance, I would actually check out After Action. Garrison Draper from the Philadelphia Union uses it, and it's a free app.
Oh, okay. That's great. Yeah. I talked to Garrison too. He's another great resource and stuff. And then I even had the recent discussion with some other companies. I believe there's a company called Right Blue Labs, if I'm not mistaken, have also done some data collection stuff, and it's very simple. The price on that is actually pretty reasonable too. So that's another option for some of the listeners out there if they're looking at some of that stuff as well. Plus they're local too, so I can try to boost some of our local business here as well.
I would actually want to shift gears a little bit and talk about what you do at U of T, or for those listeners that are not Canadian, University of Toronto.
Yeah, I had a very unique opportunity kind of come my way where I'm kind of working at the University of Toronto, and I'm down there 2 days a week. They're really looking to just really try to change the program and trying to offer the students as much of a practical experience as well as like a theory experience as well. So basically what I do is I work with our first year students. So we have I work with our first year students and our third year students. And basically we facilitate the labs towards them. So they're called practicals. And so I'm a lab facilitator, or I'm not really sure what my title is, to tell you the truth. So that's what we do. And so work closely with the students and just trying to give them exposure to a whole bunch of different types of concepts and stuff, which is really good. And for myself, from a learning standpoint, it's been awesome. I work closely with Dr. David Frost, published some really, really good research on a variety of different topics, and just working closely with him. And just really for myself, it's been good about just developing my critical thinking and really sometimes looking back as to why we do what we do and why we implement certain strategies and just really trying to think about what it is that we actually do. And be honest, sometimes it's tough. You know what I mean? You have a certain theory and you do things a certain way, and then we're actually questioned on it. Sometimes the rationale that you come up with doesn't match what it is that you're doing. And so it's really taught me to just really critically think about the approaches that I take and just some of the modalities that I use, and then how I implement those with my athletes and some of my rehabilitation athletes and that approach as well. So like I said, for me it's been a really good learning experience, and it's also great to work with young people too who are coming into their first year university, and they're like sky's the limit for them. They have so much that they can learn and take in. It's an exciting time for them and stuff, and hopefully lead them down the path that they choose and stuff. So
yeah, I have to say it's being a teaching assistant when I was at McGill was for me a great learning experience, because not only did I learn how to talk in a public setting, which can be a bit nerve-wracking at first when you're talking to 40-50 students in a lecture setting, and also kind of some of the other intangibles, which you learn, like the communication, understanding what's going on in terms of assignments. And that actually has a lot of carryover. I think when you go on, and it's a very similar setting when you're talking with players, you need a lot of the same skill sets.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it's funny because sometimes when I teach some of the concepts or some of the labs that we're doing, I get excited because I'm like, you know, I say to myself, wow, I actually know what the heck I'm talking about. You know, this makes sense to me. You know what I mean? This is awesome. So, like I said, it really just helps develop your critical thinking, I think. And to be honest, like there's a lot of BS out there. And, you know, you try to read through it and this guru claims this and this guru claims that. And how do you know which is which? How do you know if that approach is even correct? And sometimes understanding these concepts and understanding, the critical thinking aspect of it, it just helps you filter through some of that crap. You know what I mean? And, like you see some approaches that are taken in strength conditioning for soccer, you know, like why are we doing all that stuff? You know what I mean? What is the purpose of all of it? You know, does it have to be that complicated? Can it just be simple? You know what I mean? And, like I said, you know, we're talking about, you know, in an age where, you know, data collection here and data collection there, and you know, and football periodization here, and all this stuff. It's like I said, it gets overwhelming, and sometimes learning all these things helps you cut through all that stuff, and just try to help you really look at it as, you know, what do I want to do, and how am I going to go about doing it? And sometimes I think it just gets as simple as that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when it comes to data collection, I think it's the new sexy thing to do, but I mean, it's great to accumulate all of this data, but what do you do with that data? I mean, are you actually using it in order to improve season by season, or are you just collecting data for the sake of saying that you're collecting it?
No, I you know what? You couldn't have said it any better, and I totally agree. And there's times where, you know, I got really excited about data and I'm going to do all this stuff. And then you start collecting it. It's like, I'm just actually completely wasting my time right now, and there's really no point to this. So like I said, you know, like how we were talking, it's just, you know, you try and look at it as, you know, what it is that I want to achieve there, and how am I going to go about doing it? And, you know, with KW United, it was great because the season is so short and quick and the demands are so high that, yeah, some of the stuff to be collected was important. And just more or less just to look for any trends that we could find. You know, most of the times, you know, the athletes were hitting, you know, anywhere between 8 to 10 hours of sleep, but then you had some of those individuals where all of a sudden sleep would drop to 5 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours. Okay, now I can go to them and say, guys, listen, this is what I've gotten from you the last 3 days. What's going on? You know what I mean? Oh, the room's too hot. The air conditioning turned off, or you know, I had a long fight with my girlfriend or something like that. You know, there's something involved there. So I don't know if you know, like you said, like sometimes this collection of data, like, you know, but where does it end? Sometimes those feel like it's endless. And if you're not doing it, you're behind in the game. You know what I mean? So I think it's an approach, you know, it's a team by team, day by day, you know, season by season approach, and you build it slowly. And at the end of the day, I think you have to even also go back and review it at the end of the season. You know, did any of this stuff help? You know what I mean? Are we just collecting it to look over, you know, global trend throughout multiple seasons? Do we find that some of it was a complete waste of time? And or do we just need to keep collecting it to see if it does eventually prove into something? So, you know, like you said, there's just so much out there, but just, you know, how do you filter through all of it? So,
yeah, and I just want to clarify, because I know this is the internet. I'm not anti-data, and I don't think Derek is anti-data either. Obviously, when you're talking about the top of the top. We're talking about MLS teams, EPL teams. You know, they have the budget, they have the staff to collect all this data and analyze it. And when we're talking about the difference between winning the MLS Cup or not, you know, this 1% could make a difference. But I think what Derek and I are trying to say is when you start taking that top-down approach and now you start going and bringing all of this data into a college setting where you may not necessarily have the same budget or staff, or even trying to overcomplicate things and when you're working with youth athletes or high school athletes and not have that budget or the same staff resources, I think that's when you start running into that issue.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I mean? I'm just, like I said, mostly talking from my experience as well and stuff. But like you said, you know, some people feel that, you know, they have to collect data because, like you said, it's the new sexy thing to do. And just, you know, my overall thing is, I guess, is you know, if you're going to collect data, great. But what is the purpose behind it? And what is it going to tell you? What do you want it to tell you? You know what I mean? So, like I said, for us, we kept it really simple at KW United because at the same time, too, if I start asking for too much, the players aren't going to give it to me. You know what I mean? They're going to be like, this is too much of a waste of time. And they don't want to do it. You know what I mean? You try to harp on them and it's, you know, it's like, it was, we kept it really simple. But like I said, that data there was valuable for me. This is what I wanted to see. And this is what I went out and collected. And I think that's what's really important is just, like I said, again, just trying to determine what it is that you want and how are you going to go about collecting it? And then what will it tell you afterwards?
Absolutely. So part of the reason that I created the Historic Performance Podcast, besides being able to communicate with people throughout the world and spread different ideas in terms of soccer strength and conditioning and sports science, is to give information to coaches that are just starting out their career, whether they just graduated from university, just finished their first internship. So what recommendations would you have for them, Derek, that were helpful for you throughout your career so far?
Some of the things that I've learned is, for myself, well, actually one thing I'd probably say that I'm most proud of is my network that I've created. And I think Twitter is a really, really good resource. And for myself, it's worked out, it's been very good to me, just for accessing, you know, papers and reaching out to people who are just willing to share their information and willing to help each other out. I've met a lot of different people and I've just been, you know, just not being afraid to reach out to people and just knowing and just letting, you know, young strength and conditioning coaches know that there's a lot of people out there who are willing to help and just can share their job experiences with you and just, you know, things that they found work for them that didn't work for them. So I think just, you know, not being afraid to reach out to people to, just for clarification of things, or even just to chat with them, I think is good. I always take an interest in what people do. I think it's fascinating when people have chosen the path that they have. So that's one thing I think has been really good. The other thing is to just be patient. I know we're all trying to, you know, land that MLS job or land that job with a top club in Europe and stuff like that. And you know what, just continue to work hard and stay focused, stay on track, and just try to get as many resources out there as you can, chat to as many different people as you can. And then, you know, and just a lot of hard work and then hopefully it pays off.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. I think a lot of people, when they're leaving the university, they have a lot of aspirations and they want to get there as quickly as possible. And sometimes it just doesn't end up working that way. It requires a lot of hard work, a lot of dedication, a lot of long hours, and continuing education.
Yeah, it just, like I said, it never stops. You know, I recently had a conversation with someone who is someone that I want to get to that level. And even they were saying, you know what, like where they're at right now, they don't even know if that's enough. Like, where is the ultimate? Where's the pinnacle? You know, what are we all trying to get to and stuff? And you know, for myself, it's just been the love of strength and conditioning. It's been the love of the sport and just trying to stay involved in it. You know, for myself, there's one MLS club in the area that I live in. And someone has that job. So, you know, where does that leave me? So I really for myself just really enjoy working in youth football and really just trying to educate these kids and really hopefully that, you know what, hey, my dream was at one time was to become a professional soccer player and that didn't happen. So now hopefully I can help someone reach that goal. You know what I mean? And that's where I kind of get my, where I kind of get my passion from and stuff, and just seeing these young athletes excel, and like I said, you know, hopefully try to help them reach their dreams and stuff.
Since you mentioned psychology earlier and you said that you've been doing a lot of reading, are there any particular resources that you'd recommend in terms of that realm?
Oh yeah, yeah. There's some really good ones. Probably one book that really, really changed my thoughts on and just a lot of the ways I approach things is a book Mindset by Carol Dweck. I thought that was an excellent resource, and I really truly believe that book should be read by every coach, teacher, parent, you know, and just myself having two young kids, you know, the way I approach things with them now. I think that's a great, great, great book. Some other good ones, Start With Why is another good one. Some of the stuff that Simon Sinek has written, I really enjoyed those books as well. The Power of Less was another great book. So there's plenty out there and stuff. Currently I'm reading, Leaders Eat Last. So that's another good insight onto, just leadership and growth and development and stuff. So yeah, there's some excellent resources. Those are probably some of the ones that I recommend and stuff.
If you can be so kind to send me the titles after we finish the podcast, I'll make sure to link it when I publish it as well.
Sure, absolutely, for sure.
So last but not least, how would someone go about contacting you if they have any questions or comments regarding the podcast?
Yeah, if people want to get in touch with me, honestly, they can reach me via Twitter if they want. I'm pretty active on that stuff. I try to share as much resources as I can. So my handle there is at ASI_strength. And then also if people want to email me, they can email me at Derek@athleticsolutionsinc.com. So they can try me there. I'll try my best to get back to people. I'm usually pretty good at it, but sometimes I do fall behind with work and stuff. So yeah, those are two easy ways to get a hold of me and stuff. So
fantastic. And Derek, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for having me on. Hopefully I didn't bore too many people, and hopefully someone learned something from some of the stuff I had to say. So
thanks for tuning in today. Please take the time to head over to www.historicperformance.net and click on podcast for today's show notes and list of resources discussed during the podcast. If you have any questions or comments for Derek Salvador, feel free to reach out to him via Twitter or email. Don't hesitate. If you enjoy the show, please make sure to leave a review and rating on iTunes. It's greatly appreciated. And see you next time.